And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business-related issues. Each of my guests is discussing a topic from the business world. My first guest is an entrepreneur who's putting a new spin on a traditional sport and selling it to the public. He's the owner of the Ventura Black Widows women's football team. We discuss the rise of women's football and the business behind the sport. My next guest is erudite and insightful anchor for CNBC's global headquarters in New Jersey. He specializes in foreign markets, in particular Europe. We'll get a world perspective on global markets for our investor listening audience. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Simon Hobbs is an anchor based in CNBC's global headquarters in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. Simon is an award-winning anchor and previously anchored a number of programs on CNBC Europe, most recently CNBC Closing Bell and Europe Tonight. Simon was also the host of The Leaders, a series of one-on-one interviews with Europe's business and political elite. Simon began his career in radio, producing some of the biggest names in the UK broadcasting before moving to television. Simon was named the International TV Presenter of the Year by the Association for International Broadcasters back in 2006. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Economics from the University College of London. Joining us from New Jersey is Simon Hobbs. Hi, Simon. How are you today?
Hello, Billy the Brain. That's a hell of a build-up.
Well, it is, but you are quite the guy, and I'm honored to have you on the show.
It's an honor to be invited on.
Well, you're wonderful because you bring this international perspective to CNBC, and you are definitely have one of the most international perspectives of all of the CNBC anchors. So you've lived and worked in Great Britain and reported on Europe all this time. So let's start with the big question, sort of the global question, if you will. Mm-hmm. How do you see the world economy at the start of 2011?
Well, I mean, uniquely, I think for anybody who's alive now, it was always the case that the United States would lead the rest of the world through the business cycle. And of course, this time round, it isn't. It's the last to come out for all the reasons that we know so well. You know, we didn't have the crisis in the banking system in particularly the emerging markets, China, India, what they call the BRIC nations, and they've really led the growth, and Europe has been quite sluggish, though not as sluggish as the United States. Clearly, it has its own problems, having said that. Where we are now, what we're worried about now is that the growth may falter, and there's two main reasons for that. One is the fact that we've got this huge commodity inflation, particularly in like China and India, and as a result, they're very aggressively raising interest rates. And the concern is that they're not able to control the inflation because people have still got to eat, people have still got to fill up their cars, and therefore that they will overdo the interest rates and we will get hard landings there. That's the cutting edge of thought about that area of the world. And here in the United States, you know, the data is still soft. The jury's still very much out. I know the stock market's roaring, but that's partly because we're pumping all this money into the economy.
That's right.
Printing money for the Fed. And today, importantly, the European Central Bank, which is covering 330 million Europeans, we thought they were raising rates. We thought everything was good there. We'd had one rate rise. And then today, the head of that bank has suggested that they might not raise rates, actually, next month as we'd thought they would. So the cutting edge is, actually, are we a little bit softer than we thought? The stock market has yet to react to that, though it's been a very bad week already for the commodities, as you probably know.
Well, it's been a bad week for commodities. It's also been two losing days on the New York Stock Exchange with a possibility, very strong possibility, of a third losing day today. We're talking to Simon Hobbs of CNBC. Simon, I want to come back to what you're saying about the market here in the United States, the fact that it's buoyed up by the Federal Reserve printing all of that money. QE2, which is the quantitative easing 2, is going to end in June. We know that for a fact. It's been announced. Bernanke did a press conference on it last week. So the question to you is this: with QE2 stopping, do you think that is by itself going to put brakes on the U.S. economy?
Let me step back one. I mean, it perhaps that's too much of my own personal view to say that clearly we are pumping the market up with cheap money, but you don't get many people on CNBC that are in the business that are saying that. They're talking to extremely good earnings. They're talking to growth still net around the world being quite good, and CEOs able to play on that, and the fact they're sitting on a lot of money, and the fact that they will have a big M&A, kind of a lot more mergers and acquisitions coming through in the future, and we could discuss the reasons why that might happen. So the bulk of the market is not, as I said to you, thinking that we're just bowled up on cheap money. There is a huge debate, however, about what happens when it comes to an end. Still, the United States is likely to be extremely accommodative. What does that mean? Well, it means that a lot of the bonds that they bought, they'll roll over. So as they mature, as the treasuries mature or whatever, they'll keep reinvesting that money. In other words, they'll try and keep interest rates relatively low. And clearly, in terms of the market rates that the Fed sets, that's going to be low for a very long time. The end of this year, coming into next year, and even then, maybe just a small rate rise. What we do need, though, say some, is a rate rise to try and stop the dollar from falling, because the dollar falling is having huge repercussions for everybody around the world, not least for dollar and gas.
Well, absolutely it is, and I'm a dollar hawk myself, Simon, so I'm very concerned about that. I want to come back to that, but let's turn our attention, if we can, to Europe, because here in the United States, rightfully so, we've been very self-absorbed on the U.S. economy, and we really haven't paid much attention to the rest of the world, with the exception, of course, of China. But let's take a look at Europe, which is your specialty, and let me ask you, what's going on in Europe? There's some fantastic stories there. Germany is one of them. I think the new Prime Minister, David Cameron, in Great Britain is doing good things, but what is your perspective as a professional looking at the 330 million people in the European market area?
Well, Germany is doing extremely well. There's no doubt about that. Germany restructured, and there's some great investments in Germany. I'm not sure now is the time to buy, but those big multinationals are doing very well. They restructured, they've kept their wage costs down 6 or 7 years ago, and arguably they're in a currency, of course, that is being held down by all those peripheral economies. And I guess we should talk about what they call the pig nations, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, and that sovereign crisis. At the moment, of course, we've just had a bailout on Portugal go through, and the feeling seems to be that the Europeans have kind of contained what's going on at the moment. The big question is whether you get what they call a restructuring of the debt in Greece, i.e. Greece says, actually, guys, we can't pay any longer our debt that we owe. We can't service that debt sufficiently. We've not cut enough jobs. We've not cut enough spending. We've not raised taxes sufficiently to enable us to keep doing that. And then what they will possibly do is come to the market and say, okay, well, we're only going to honor 80 cents in the dollar on the debt that we owe. That's called a restructuring. As you know, we've had it many times in many places. Not so much in developed nations. That potentially causes a huge problem, because the big banks, the big French and German banks, are sitting on all that debt. Net, I suppose, across the European Union, possibly $1 trillion of pig debt is held by those banks. And as soon as they start having the write-downs or the haircuts on that, then the banks have to declare that, and their own financial security isn't so good as a result, and then you get the risk of a systemic problem. None of the other banks are trusting each other as we had last year.
Well, that's a very good insight. We're talking to Simon Hobbs, who is an anchor at CNBC in New Jersey at their world headquarters there. And Simon, you hit on something in your answer there that has been a concern to me for a long time. Germany in particular has a really strong economy in Europe today. However, they also hold a lot of the debt. They have bailed out Portugal. They have bailed out Italy. They have bailed out Greece. And they could be left holding the bag for write-downs on this, which would then in turn perhaps cause their economy to falter. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, let me be clear. It's not actually the write-downs that I'm talking about are actually what the banks, the commercial banks, in not just Germany, but France and the UK, and indeed the United States, what they have been lending to these sovereign governments over the years. That's where the write-down occurs. That's the problem that we're trying to avoid. In essence, because the problem is so big, we don't get that far. The French and the German taxpayers will continue to bail everybody else out around Europe so that their commercial banks, their private banks, don't suffer the write-downs and don't go under. It's too horrendous. That's the dirty secret why the German taxpayer keeps giving money to Greece, or at least loaning money to Greece, for their own good, to stop their own banks going under. What we may have is a Brady Bond-style arrangement, ultimately, where the Greeks and the Portuguese swap their debts for debt that is cumulatively organized by the rest of the Eurozone, and then the commercial players will get a haircut of 15, maybe 20% on the debt that they have. But that is actually manageable, it goes the argument.
All right, we're talking to Simon Hobbs from CNBC. And Simon, you have been stationed in Europe. You've come over to the United States. You've been here almost 2 years. And here in the United States, last year, towards the end of last year, sovereign debt was the story, and everybody was worried in the United States about sovereign debt. However, we've sort of turned our attention, at least in the news reporting, the financial news reporting, away from sovereign debt. Is that because of the fact that the United States now has to look a little bit more inward? We just had, within 2 weeks, the Standard & Poor's downgrade of the U.S. credit rating. their fears about state debt in states like California, where you're talking right now, or Illinois, Massachusetts? Or do we really have to worry about not sovereign debt, but debt within our own borders right now?
Totally. That's one of the major issues. And you mentioned that they didn't actually downgrade the debt of the United States. If they'd done that, we'd all have fallen out of bed. What they did is they warned that they might downgrade moving forward. And really, the onus is on the politicians on Capitol Hill to get their act together on this. We are lucky in the United States that we are. This is a reserve currency, and therefore people still are supporting effectively the United States in its borrowing, namely the Chinese. So we've got more time. We have more time to play with. But as you saw in Europe, as you've seen with Greece, the violence on the streets there, the bailouts that we've had to go through in Europe, you know, these bond vigilantes, as they call them, can really get you. I mean, there is an argument that because the U.S. debt, I mean, that the United States will always be able to pay its debt because it's denominated in dollars, i.e. it's dollar debt, and the Federal Reserve can simply print more money to buy the debt of the Treasury, which is effectively what we've had over the past few years. But you don't want to get yourself into a situation where the world turns on the United States, won't lend, and therefore the rate at which you have to borrow goes up, the interest rates rise, and suddenly you can't afford it. And that would cause a downgrade. And that's the nightmare scenario that really the politicians, we would all be a lot better if the politicians moved more rapidly to make the hard decisions. But, you know, it's a very vibrant democracy here. And everybody's for being fiscally conservative until you actually say to them, well, what about Medicare and Medicaid then? Are you prepared to have that cut? And then suddenly they're not so fiscally conservative. And those are the big questions that we have to deal with.
Well, editorial comment here. I'm not sure that the people representing us right now in Congress are capable of making those kinds of decisions simply because they're not informed, as you are, Simon Hobbs, about what some of the underlying reasons behind this might be. Let's turn our attention back to Europe if we can. You sort of alluded to this today with the breaking news from the European Central Bank and Jean-Claude Trichet. But here in the United States, Ben Bernanke, who is the head of the Federal Reserve, has been on the news saying that rates are not going to go up here in the United States. He's on record for that. Jean-Claude Trichet, however, has been doing, up until today, some saber-rattling about raising the interest rates in Europe. How likely is it that Europe is going to raise rates? And if they do, what's the impact on the United States of that happening?
Europe has already raised rates once. They put a warning shot across the bow. The situation is slightly different in Europe in that you have, for example, Germany, where workers there have, because the economy is doing so well, have actually had quite decent pay rises, you know, 4-5%. Can you imagine Americans getting a 4-5% pay rise?
Boy, I'd love that.
At a unionized level at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
So they have a problem in Europe, which they've dealt with by beginning to raise rates. But the argument there goes, they probably raised rates more to just say, look, we are still vigilant on inflation, and also to try and support the euro. One of the problems that we have here, and why inflation is so bad, and why gas prices are towards $4 a gallon, is because the dollar keeps falling. And that has a major, major effect on the living standards of ordinary people. It's incidentally one reason why the stock market keeps gaining, because the value of the dollar is falling. So the value of those companies on the stock market in dollars must rise. And you don't often see that reported because, hell, everybody's on the bandwagon and everybody's making money, provided the market's going up.
Oh, everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid. There's no question about that. Let's talk about the European currency, if we can, the euro. In the eurozone, it's a unifying currency, and there are about 17 countries, if I'm not mistaken, participating in that. But
right,
each of those countries has divergent fiscal policies within the member countries. Is the euro sustainable over time, given that there are separate fiscal policies being pursued by each of the member countries?
Yes, it is over time, because in time they won't have divergent fiscal policies. You know, as Warren Buffett said, you know, you only really learn who's wearing no shorts when the tide goes out.
Right.
And the tide has gone out right the way around the world with all the problems that we've faced recently. And yes, we always knew in Europe, you know, the Eurozone has been around in its present form for a good 10 years. We knew that this was a problem. It's only when you push it to the extreme, as we have done, that it really becomes a crisis. And they are dealing with that crisis, actually, for the Europeans, moving quite fast, bringing together 17 member states towards a system that will ensure that they are all heading in the same direction on their tax and spend. It's very painful. Don't underestimate the pain that is being gone through in Europe. They have cut in Greece, for example, the equivalent of 8% of GDP from their budgets in terms of taxes and spending over about a year. Paul Ryan with his great plans for the United States, is talking about savings of 30% of GDP here over 10 years. Greece is going through a huge amount of pain, and the other countries are as well, to try and get themselves back onto the right track. Ultimately, I do believe that the single currency will hold together, because the alternative for those that leave is so terrible. You get kicked out of the Eurozone, nobody's going to lend to you. Greece will become just a desert economically.
All right, well, that's very encouraging, Simon, and I'm glad to hear you say that. However, let me ask the other question. If the fiscal policy of all 17 of those countries starts to unify, where does national sovereignty end and where does the Euro Union sovereignty begin? In other words, will France, will Belgium, will they start to lose their individual country identities?
Yes, they will, and that's why it's so difficult, because when you have to go back to understand it fully, like to understand America, you have to go back to the Civil War. To understand Europe, you have to go back to World War II.
Okay.
And there was a decision after World War II that we would never have war again in Europe as we had had. We would never have the Holocaust. We would never have a Nazi Germany. And what they did was to increasingly come together economically in the knowledge that as time went on, politically that would follow. And that's what you see from the origins of the European steel community, steel and coal community, through, remember when we used to call it just the European community, it was a single market,
yes.
Then it became the European Union, now it's become a single currency for just 17 of those 27 countries. So all the way along, you are being dragged further and further towards a form of political consolidation, but that's what the founding fathers, whether explicitly or implicitly, did mean for Europe, and it's worked. We haven't, with the exception of perhaps Bosnia, had a war in Europe for the last however many years it is.
Now, why is Great Britain on the outside looking in then, not being a part of
because
the Eurozone?
Because Great Britain thinks it's very special. I'm a Briton, and we think, you know, until about, I suppose, about 8 years ago on British television, once a day there'd be a film about World War II. We believe we won World War II. It was a bit of a surprise when I came here, and the Americans think that they won World War II. Britons believe they're special and they're different, and they don't want to give up sovereignty. They actually think they're much closer to America than they are to Europe. I don't know if that's true, but that's what most people would go on holiday to Orlando, particularly people on lower income groups, rather than actually go on holiday into Europe. And that's the nature of it. They don't feel they're part of it. And legitimately, they didn't want to give up their sovereignty. And also, the Europeans are very good at saying, look at the problems that we have with a single currency. You don't want to be part of that.
All right. Insight from Simon Hobbs, CNBC anchor at their Inglewood, New Jersey facility there. Simon, appreciate it. We'll have to have you back to talk about the dollar. We'll have to have you back to talk about China, both subjects I know that you are particularly strong on. But if people like what they hear from you, they're interested in learning more, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
CNBC.com.
CNBC.com, and look up Simon Hobbs. You can find a complete
bio.
It's
been a pleasure talking to you, Billy the Brain. Have a very nice evening.
And you, Simon. Take care. We'll talk to you down the road.